There is an ancient Canaanite story about the morning star. He attempted to rise high above the clouds and establish himself upon the mountain where the gods met. He had desired to replace the highest god and rule over the world himself. His attempts were thwarted, though, and he was cast down into the underworld. The prophet Isaiah quotes that story in chapters 13 and 14 of his book, a reference to the pride and aspirations of my old friend, the king of Babylon. Many have since projected that story onto me, but I don't need Isaiah to tell my story. I don't need anyone to tell my story. As a matter of fact, the less said about me, the better. I prefer to stay in the background and not draw attention to myself. I'm a behind-the-scenes kind of archangel, if you know what I mean. As Mephistopheles says in Faust, the people do not know the devil is there, even when he has them by the throat. Oh, that's good writing, huh? Of course, you've seen me in stories and cartoons, seen children dressed as me for my big October holiday. But most of you, honestly, probably view me as a mythic legend of some kind. Perfect. Of course, there are a few cryptic references to me in the scriptures. I tried to keep as much out as possible, but couldn't prevent it all. I might as well use it to my advantage. You'll recall the story of Job from ancient times, how I essentially entered into a wager with the enemy over his zealous follower. Well, the reason I'm here with you today is that my old enemy and I, the father above and I, the father below, have entered into another similar wager over his followers. Over you, as a matter of fact. I've wagered that I can stand before you today in this handsome physical form and lay all my cards on the table in front of you and tell you exactly how I work, and not a single one of you will change the way they live. My enemy, of course, maintains the same pathetic faith in you that he held in Job, and so we find ourselves in our traditional positions. And you are in the middle. Again. As long as I'm laying my cards on the table, let me begin by saying that I was wrong about this. Because I didn't expect this. You think I'm crafty. Oh, I heard everything you said about me in the service earlier. You think I don't know the scriptures? I know them better than any human scholar who's ever lived. I've studied them intently in order to know my enemy better. Of course I'm craftier than anybody else. Of course I'm a schemer who prowls around like a lion, devouring people. So what? I'm not half as crafty. I'm not half the schemer that he is. And never was he more cunning than when he caught me in that trap. In that trap, he caught me completely off guard. Oh, you think I'm cunning. I had expected with everyone else that all the mewling prophecies about the Messiah were going to be fulfilled in a politically nationalistic way, because that's the way he worked. Follow me and I will give you a land flowing with milk and honey. I'll build you into a great nation. I'll make you a mighty kingdom. And once they have a kingdom, he gives them kings. And thanks to my skillful intervention, they enjoy a little too much the pleasures from the surrounding communities, and they don't hold up their end of the bargain, so he has to send them into exile as punishment. But then the old softy has mercy on them again and lets them come back, lets them rebuild their temple, lets them rebuild their military fortifications around Jerusalem, time and again fulfilling his promises in a politically national way. So that when Messiah comes, I'm expecting, along with everyone else, that he will establish Israel as the dominant political and military force on the planet. That's the contest I prepared for hundreds of years. While my enemy was cultivating art and beauty and culture in the Roman Empire, in my empire, I was building something else altogether. Cruelty, atrocity, and armies. I built the greatest fighting force the world had ever known, ripened to over 250,000 soldiers by the time it was clear that that sniveling carpenter brat was the enemy's chosen one. I was prepared to crush any pathetic military attempt made by Israel once this carpenter unveiled his birthright and took his place at the head of the forces, and I waited for him to do it. And I waited. What was taking him so long? And then it was too good to be true. He fell by a mediocre little trap I'd set just to draw him out. I thought I would force him into a corner so he would finally have to call on Michael, on Raphael, on Gabriel and their armies to come and save him. I'd spent centuries training my angelic and demonic forces, raising hundreds of thousands of human soldiers for the battle of the ages. And in the end, all I needed was two lunkhead Romans, one to hold Jesus down, while the other one nailed him to a cross. I could have gotten by with one, probably. He just laid there and let them execute him as if he were a common criminal. And all my work was for nothing. My war was over before it even began. I remember thinking how anticlimactic it all was. Until Sunday. Of course, I'd seen him raise those two snot-nosed urchins and his buddy Lazarus from the dead. But when he said, "I am the resurrection and the life," I thought he meant that he was the only one who could resurrect. And if he was gone, if he was dead, no one would be there to resurrect him. He couldn't raise himself. He was dead. And so the enemy cheated. He crossed the line and raised his boy himself, and he cheated, and he knows it. In one fell swoop, my eternal enemy conquers me and shames me at the same time, making me hate him all the more, robbing me of my greatest weapon. I had prepared for and looked forward to this battle of the ages with those sniveling goody-two-shoes archangels and the Messiah and their armies. And instead I'm stuck with this annoying hand-to-hand guerrilla combat, one puny person at a time. Which brings me to you. You pathetic mortal sacks of bones and entrails. Don't imagine for a moment that you matter to me. Oh no, I'm coming after you to get to him. Because he fancies you all his children. And nothing hurts more than when somebody gets to your kids. So let's be friends, shall we? Of course, I have most of humanity in my back pocket already. With them, it's a simple matter of steady as she goes. Keep them focused on themselves. Don't let them have any contact with anyone who knows the enemy's escape plan. Now is a particularly wonderful time to be me, because worth and meaning and truth are all relative. That's why we're gray. Postmodern gray, isn't it flattering? It's my favorite color, because there is no black and white anymore. Everything is relevant. Truth. What is truth? Ah, Pilate, my son, if we had only known. And just as I had cultivated legions of Roman soldiers for my battle 2,000 years ago, I have significant forces on both coasts now, promulgating my propaganda, telling everyone that happiness and worth are all found in what you own, and that sex is love, and love is sex. Of course, you all hear all the same messages that the rest of the nation hears. Some of you hear them better than others. Some of you are getting extra attention from my side right now because you're considering a move to the other side. And let me tell you this, the moment you make a commitment to the Father of Light, we will do everything in our power to reclaim you for the kingdom of the Father of Darkness. I say we because, let's face it, not one of you here merits my own personal attention, but as they say, I have people who take care of people like you. And so what we'll do while you're in this dangerous period of transition is help you to focus on what you think you're losing to follow Christ, to make it feel like it just costs too much to follow Jesus. I'm going to have to lose those cherished, meaningless relationships. I won't be able to have as much empty fun. I won't have time to read the self-important Sunday Times, much less the worthless crossword puzzle. And when will there be time for all the laundry? Our other goal with you is difficult but important. We try to make sure that once you cross over into the kingdom of light, you tell no one from your old life about it. Make you think that you'll try it out for a few weeks and see if it takes before you say anything. Because let me tell you, nothing is more damaging than the raw enthusiasm of the testimony of a new convert to Christ. It's so full of fresh joy and exuberance and hope and awe. You see, we haven't had time to convince you that it's inappropriate to tell people plainly that Jesus has saved your life. Which brings me to you older Christians, you long in the tooth Christians. We've had time to teach you that lesson very well. So our primary goal with you is just to keep you quiet, with great success, I might add. Well, it's not our only goal. We experience triple victories when we tempt you into sin. Oh, it's so wonderful to watch you fall into sin. Oh, and to heap on the guilt. Oh, wallow in the guilt. Oh, I'm so worthless. Oh, I can't believe I did it again. Lord, I'm just kidding. And we just make you feel as separate from God as we can. We make you feel as unforgiven as we can. We make you feel, I love playing with your feelings, with your emotions. The Creator gave them to you so you'd be like Him, but you have no idea how to use them, how to control them. Oh, but I do. And I get so much mileage out of that feeling of guilt when you've sinned. I make you think that you are not forgiven until you feel forgiven, and then I just make sure you never feel forgiven. And then you're absolutely worthless to the other side. Because you're never going to say anything to anyone about Jesus while you're feeling worthless and unforgiven. And I never let you think that your forgiveness is contingent solely on the work of Jesus Christ upon the cross. It has nothing to do with how you feel. Think about the arrogance of that thought. Oh, no, no, no. Don't think about that. Think about how bad you feel. And then even better, if someone has managed to see you or learns about your sin, then you become the hypocrite Christian who believes one thing, who says one thing, and then does the entire opposite. And you end up testifying against Christ for me. I love it. Oh, but there's another delicious option that presents itself if you fall into sin. Because as long as you're feeling guilty, as long as you're feeling separate from God, as long as you feel like you've crossed the line, why not enjoy yourself while you're on our side for a little bit? Oh, you'll get around to repenting. But now that you're over here, things that weren't attractive before suddenly are very interesting. Why not take it up another level and take a step? Give it a try. Oh, and there's something else. Explore your options. Take another step in the dark and another step. And before you know it, you stay on my side of the line. And you walk and you live in the dark. Because any sin has the potential to become enslaving addiction. Each of you is tempted when you are dragged away by your own evil desire and enticed. Such a beautiful word. Then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, gives birth to death. Both kinds. That's Jesus' kid brother, James. We custom make, we tailor make your temptations for you. Just like that annoying spirit, the henchman of that terrible trio, comes and disperses gifts to you based on your strengths. We provide personalized temptations based on your weaknesses. I'm not going to waste my time or energy trying to tempt someone to embezzle money from the company who's never taken a dime in their lives. No, instead, I'm going to get them to look down the low-cut blouse of their coworker and get them by an entirely different route. Hell is hell, no matter how you get there. I'll take you any way I can. You know, my least favorite sentence in this book is that there is therefore no condemnation thou for those who are in Christ Jesus. And so my least favorite human who's ever lived is the person who wrote that sentence. You all know who it is, you scholars. He writes in his letter to the Ephesians, I tell you this and insist on it in the Lord. Paul is such a jerk, isn't he? You must no longer live as the Gentiles do in the futility of their thinking. They are darkened in their understanding and separated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of their hearts. Having lost all sensitivity, they have given themselves over to sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity, and they want more. And more. Send shivers down my spine. Did you listen closely? How does my cycle begin? I darken your understanding. How did I start with Eve in the story you heard just before I came in? Did I walk up to her and say, oh, honey, turn your back on God and come with me. I'll show you a much better time. No, I darkened her understanding. I said, did God really say that you shall not eat from any fruit of the tree, of any of the trees in this garden? Well, no, just one tree. If we eat the fruit from that one tree then will die. I've already started to darken her understanding so I can come back and say, oh, darling, you won't die. Oh, that's just a hyperbole. It's a literary device of exaggeration to convey the fact that everything's going to be different once you snack on that delicious fruit. And, honey, the difference is going to be wonderful. And before you know it, the entire human race is in my back pocket. And it all started with darkening her understanding, with clouding the issues, with taking a simply stated will of God and turning it into an intellectual puzzle instead. And so I have to say, I adore your fascination with the original Greek text of the New Testament. I adore it. Because whenever anything challenging comes along, it's always, what does it say in the Greek text? Does adultery in English mean adultery in Greek? What does adultery mean in Greek? Or what does fornication really mean in Greek? And whether your questions are out of sincere intellectual curiosity or you have an agenda and a sin to justify, the same thing happens. The simply stated will of God is placed at arm's length, like some kind of classroom experiment to be poked and prodded and judged. Hooray for my side. Either way. Of course, those who go to the text of the scriptures seeking loopholes, wanting to find out how much they can get away with, already have their understanding darkened before they read a word. But with a little nudge from our side, the flesh can harden anybody's heart. And when your heart is hard, you lose that sensitivity, and then you indulge yourself. Oh, your 3 weeks have been so bad because your wife is so sick and she's got a terrible headache. Oh, poor you. Well, you know, a little bit of online porn won't hurt anybody. And it's not like you're going to be with someone else. Go ahead and indulge yourself a little. Having lost all sensitivity, they have given themselves over to sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity, and they want more and more, and your heart is hard and your sensitivity's gone, and you begin to indulge yourself and you step out into the downward spiral. And we make sure you maintain your focus solely on yourself, so you fail to recognize the building consequences in your marriage, in your children, in your work, in your eternity, until it's simply too late. Oh, there is nothing new under the sun. We've been using the same devices in your lives that we have for millennia. My people and I know how to make you happy. We've been providing quality happiness to people you know and love. We knew what David really needed, and so we got him Bathsheba. Like father, like son, we knew what Solomon wanted. We got him 700 wives and 300 concubines. 1 Kings 11 says that his wives undid his heart, among other things. They also represented improper political alliances, but let's not kid ourselves about Solomon's continual lust for more. If there's anything that's somewhat new in my toolbox, I'd have to say that it's real estate. Oh, I love New York real estate. And yes, I'm his personal sponsor. You know who I'm talking about. I love how much it costs to rent, much less buy an apartment here in New York City. I can't tell you the number of couples who have shared a home and a bed well before their marriage because it just costs too much to maintain two households in New York City. And I've won an even greater victory in those of you who think that what I've just described is not a sin, because your ethics are tracking more closely with the society around you than with the simply stated will of God. And I'd have to say political correctness is a good tool in my hands right now, because most of you will not share your faith in any way, shape, or form for fear of seeming intolerant. Whether you're afraid of losing your job or your friends or your standing in people's eyes doesn't matter, because the people you're not talking to are losing their chance to escape my back pocket. And for this, I sincerely thank you. I know you take great comfort from the fact that the enemy can turn anything, no matter how horrible, into good for you. But let me tell you, I can do the same thing. I can take the most powerful gift. I can take the most brilliant potential. I can take the greatest blessing and turn it to the dark side with power. Those blessings that you enjoy so much, I can make you focus on them so much you forget the one who gave them to you, and in the end you end up worshiping your career, your status, your ambition, your relationships, and you are as much an idolater as those who worshipped me as Baal in the ancient times. For there is nothing new under the sun. As part of my wager agreement, I pledged that I would tell the whole truth, as much as I could, about who I am, so I can say that I am an angel of the highest, most powerful order. I was created before time and have power that you cannot imagine or understand. I am not God, nor his equal, yet. And so I'm not omni-anything, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent. I'm not omnipotent. I do not have all power. I have a lot of power that you should fear. But I still have to ask permission before I attack people, as I did with Job, as Jesus tattled on me and told Peter that I had asked permission to sift him like wheat. I'm not omnipresent. I can't be in Moscow and Madrid and New York at the same time. I'm limited by place and time. I can't travel through time. I can't go back in the past, but I can remember everything about it because I have a supernatural memory. But I can't go to the future and find out what happens next. Otherwise, I would have seen that resurrection thing coming and never would have let Christ be crucified. I would have been his personal bodyguard, so he died old and was forgotten. I'm also not omniscient. I don't know everything, even about the time that I'm in. I mean, if I did, really, do you think I would have let little innocent baby Jesus escape to Egypt when I had my Herod killing all the little babies? Of course not. And as I said, I am not alone by any means. I have legions of demons and angels and people in my service. And one of us knows you. We are the rulers. We are the authorities. We are the powers of the dark forces, the spiritual forces ruling in the heavenly realms that Paul described so poetically in Ephesians 6. I couldn't have said it better myself. And so every one of you is getting individualized attention from at least one person on my team. Maybe more. And I promise you, not one of you escapes our notice. Well, the question is, now that you know, does it make any difference? Oh, I'm supposed to pray now. This will be fun. I hope you are as frustrated as you can be with every person in this room by how little they appreciate you, how little they do for you, and how no one who knows them realizes or knows that they belong to you. I hope that when they manage to live righteous lives, that they are bored out of their minds and angry at you for your petty restrictions. May they all forget how deeply you love them and turn instead to me to find their happiness. And may no one in the world ever be lost to heaven because of the influence of anyone. Amen. Oh, go ahead and stand for the benediction, okay? God is far away. He does not care about you. He has bigger fish to fry, so you have got to take care of yourselves. Life is about you, what you want, what you need. The only reason to look at other people is to find out what they have that you don't. That's what you need. There is no epic battle across the ages between good and evil. You are not pawns in the middle of it. So leave your Bible on the shelf with its empty platitudes and take care of yourself, because no one else is going to. Spend no time with Christians except for when you're here. Sleep in as much as possible. Remember that He is all about rules, not about relationship. Remember that you are worthless and of no use to Him whatsoever. And remember that I am just a mythical legend. And I'll see you in hell.